Hello and welcome to Preparing Foster Youth for Adulting, the podcast designed to highlight strategies and resources that help youth in care transition to adulthood successfully. Our guest today is Lee Marshall. Lee is the CEO and founder of Kids to Love, a nonprofit organization that works with foster youth and youth aging out of care in Madison, Alabama. Welcome, Lee. Thank you so much for joining our podcast series. How are you doing today?
I'm great. It's very excited to be here and to have this conversation with you today.
Oh, I am too. I heard about your organization through an article that I found online, and I knew right away that I wanted to invite you to be part of this. I'm just very excited to have that chance here today. The first thing that I'm going to ask you, Lee, is if you could please share your background, your story, and what path brought you to working with youth aging out of foster care.
Well, I am the founder and CEO of the Kids to Love Foundation, and that foundation we started 20 years ago in January of this year, and it came as a result of my passion of being born into foster care and adopted. And I feel like I'm one of the lucky ones. I was the first one in my family to graduate college, to have that opportunity at a higher education. And that's really been such a trajectory in my path to help others that were in the same situation I was in, or maybe didn't have the opportunity that I had to kind of pull back and bring them up with us to change the face of foster care in our community. And in that time, in 20 years, we've had a direct impact on the lives of more than 310,000 people living in the foster care system. And so I think our efforts are working. And as I like to tell people, we're 20 years in and we are just getting started.
I love it. I love it. So how long were you in foster care before you were adopted?
I was very lucky. I was born into the Tennessee Baptist Children's Home in Memphis, Tennessee. And was placed with my parents at 6 weeks old, and they adopted me at the age of two. So I didn't have the risk of lingering in foster care. I didn't face the aging out that we have the heart for now. But to me, it certainly crafted who I am as an individual. We do know that trauma is associated with abandonment. I do a lot of work on the clinical side with trauma and support of our kids that way. And so I feel like my situation was the absolute best situation it could be from foster care to adoption, but that doesn't mean that it didn't come without pain and heartbreak and all of those along the way that had to make some really hard decisions to give me a chance at a better life.
And I would imagine, I was in the foster care system myself, but older. But I would imagine even if you're adopted as a baby, assuming you know that you were adopted, you have a sense of, if but for the grace of God go I,
right,
is the phrase that some people use, that if I had not been adopted, this could have been my path. And I imagine that's in the back of your mind.
It's constantly in the back of my mind. And, you know, we have so many outreach programs. We have a farm where girls live full time with us. And I look at their faces, and you're right. It's like every day I'm like, thank you, God, for giving me a family and giving me stability. And thank you for putting me in a position to be able to do that for these young ladies as well.
Right, exactly. Now, was this the first thing that you did in your professional life as you started this nonprofit? Or was there something happening in your life that, you know, gave you the skills that you needed to do this?
I actually, my bachelor's degree is in journalism. And so for more than 20 years, I started in radio in college, and then I worked as a television news anchor for 20 years and loved that time and just a great opportunity to really be a servant in our community here in North Alabama and also in Kentucky and Washington State and other markets that I worked in. I am very inquisitive. I love to be a good storyteller. Journalism is just, I love to write. And so it gave me the platform, I think, that became the ultimate connector for me to be able to do what I'm doing now. And so while I was in television, I started the foundation, quote unquote, on the side, and started working with that. I would profile children that needed to find forever families on television every week and use that platform to have opportunity to get more than 200 children adopted out of foster care across the state of Alabama and into forever families. And then in 2015, we were given an amazing gift of a building by some local donors. And we launched the vision of our K-Tech program that we're going to talk a little bit more about a little bit later. But it really became a crossroads for me of, you know, to be able to be a journalist, that's a very demanding career. And I'm also a mom of two, and my girls are very important to me. And it just got to be a point in my life where I could continue to do all the things, but not take the things that I felt passionate about to the next level. Vision and visionary is a gift of mine, and I have a ton of vision. And our K-Tech program was a vision that I knew that if I was going to launch it, I had to step away from something I loved to do something that I was called to do. And so in 2015, I retired from television news to bring this vision to life of our K-Tech program, of our center. And since then, our organization has grown by leaps and bounds and how we're able to serve very intentionally and life-changing. And so, yeah, so I was a journalist for 20 years, and now I get to change lives every single day. And it is the most blessing, beneficial, empowering, sad, hard, like all, you know, all of adjectives. It really runs the gamut. But I'm just so thankful that I've been called to do this. And we have a community that rally around us to support us in our efforts to serve our kids.
Oh, that helps so much when you have that support, for sure. So I just have to say, before we move on, interviewing for a podcast like this must be a breeze for you.
Well, I love doing this. And what I love about where we are in 2024, there are so many mediums for us to be able to have these conversations.
Yeah.
That even, you know, I mean, podcasts were up and coming when I left the news, but I don't know. I love that we have the ability now to share the stories and to tell good stories that matter on platforms that are out of the box. And I love that.
Yeah.
And I think that that is also a key factor of why our organization has been so successful, because I joke that so many on our team are television refugees. And so we took our storytelling ability, and we now translate it to a nonprofit where we're constantly telling the stories of how we're serving in our kids. And that has become a big difference maker in us being able to get the support, to get the attention, just like you saw one of our stories, to be able to tell our story to a focused audience that care instead of a huge, large audience that might not give a flip at all.
Yes. I think that from what I've heard from all the organizations that we work with, the most impactful format for getting people's attention regarding the issues that these youth face is standing in front of a group of people with a young person who can share their story about what they experienced and how the organization, whatever it is, has helped them. It totally makes sense to me. The storytelling aspect is, it connects people's emotions to what's happening.
Yes, absolutely.
That's wonderful. Now, I am very interested in hearing about what it is that Kids to Love does. That came first before K-Tech.
Yes.
So let's talk about Kids to Love first and get a bit of an understanding of the foundation.
So as I mentioned, Kids to Love was established in 2004. And our mission is to meet the immediate needs of children in foster care while they're in care. And so when we first started, I really went to foster families to see what their biggest needs were, because we wanted to be a gap filler. And so, you know, one of the first outreach programs we started to do was backpacks for these kids. And then we added Christmas gifts to these kids. And so for years, we would be that additional support and service for our kids. And one of the things that we also started early on was college scholarships. And last year we hit the $1 million mark of college scholarships awarded to foster youth aging out of care. Wow. And so that was for our kids that had the capacity to go to college. And we're going to talk a little bit about, but what if they don't, a little bit later. So Kids to Love, really, our initial service pattern was, well, what do you need? Because if no one in our community was serving children in foster care, and again, I felt that this was a calling, and so why not go straight to the foster parents to see what they need to empower them? From there, we started doing training for foster families. We then, in 2015, when I retired from news and just focused on Kids to Love full time, In that year, we launched our KTEP program, which is a workforce training initiative, Davidson Farms, which is our farm for girls to live full-time, ages 7 to 19. We later added cottages when those girls age out of the main house and to support them in their aging out journey. We also are a licensed child placing agency that lets us do both foster care and private adoption, and we're licensed to do private adoption in Alabama and in Tennessee. And so what we call ourselves is really an ecosystem, that no matter when a child enters the foster care system, we have a program and support in place to meet them where they are, to walk them through foster care, and to help them successfully age out of the system so they can become independent.
That's amazing. I'm trying to get a sense of how big you are with all of these programs that you have.
We are massive!
You say that as if you're proud.
Oh, listen, I am the most... We have our team meetings every Tuesday. And every Tuesday morning, I walk in, I'm like, guys, I got an idea. And like I said, vision is a gift of mine. One of the other things, let me add this too, that we've added, I'd say within the last 2 to 3 years, when we brought our girls into the farm, that's really when we started, you know, living with our girls every day. That's when we saw the trauma that they've experienced. And so we started small there, bringing therapists in, helping to solve the issues. For example, you know, our girls might hoard food, and that's as a result of coming from a place where maybe they didn't have the resources for food, and so they didn't get to eat very often, or maybe being in other placements where you get to eat at these certain times and no more. And so one of the things that we did is we removed barriers. What I love is we do not accept state or federal funding. And so we are able to do what we need to do. We're able to do what our kids need. And we have a little to no red tape at all. I joke and say, I'm the red tape because I'm redheaded. So I'm like, I'm the red tape. And so, you know, we put like a yes bowl in the middle of the table at the farm, and our girls are able to go eat anytime they want. And that solved food hoarding, which then solved, you know, food in bedrooms, which then solved bugs in bedrooms. So, you know, I'm always looking at how do we solve the problem? And it's not going to be a traditional way. It's going to be a very simple but unique out-of-the-box approach. And so once we saw the difference in our girls with therapy and mental health and the trauma that every one of them experienced, we now offer mental wellness. We broke ground last year on a new building that we're about to build. It's going to be 17,000 square feet. It's going to house a very out-of-the-box mental wellness approach, hyper-focused on trauma and healing trauma, not just serving trauma, but healing trauma. And so, you know, for us, it's not just about meeting their physical needs, but it's about meeting their mental health needs as well. Because I can train someone, I can give them a college scholarship, I can give them a Christmas gift, I can give them a backpack. But if they are still living in that trauma, they're never going to get past that. I cannot expect them to become a healthy, happy, successful adult on their own because they don't know how to have relationships. They don't know how to cope. And so for us, it truly is that wraparound ecosystem to serve our kids with what they need and what they need.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, you make me think of something that I've thought of several times. It has to do with words and the impact of words. Because you've used the phrase getting past trauma, and I've heard other people say getting over trauma. I always use the term living with trauma effectively. And the reason is because having been in foster care myself and what preceded it, you are always going to remember it. Right. It's always going to be part of you, what happened to you. So are you getting past it? Are you getting over it? Are you learning how to live with it? What do you think? And I'm not saying mine is right or wrong. I'm just saying, what do you think the best approach would be?
I don't disagree with you at all. I mean, for our young people and, you know, your personal experience and mine, we're always going to have that in the back of our mind. There's always going to be triggers that trauma. What our goal is to minimize the impact of those triggers, to not let it send our kids into a fight or flight or freeze mode anymore, but actually be able to control and to be able to say, you know what? And I've had girls say this to me, you know what, Miss Lee? Last year that would have happened, and this is how I would have acted. But you know what? I see it for what it is now. Yeah. And I know that I'm stronger than. I have overcome that. And so I think you're right. I mean, living with trauma is a great way to phrase that. I just don't want it to continue to paralyze them.
Maybe it's managing trauma.
There you go. Yes.
Maybe that, or something along those lines. Now, we can leave it up to the audience to decide what would be best for them.
Yes.
But it's just, your words have, they do have an impact.
Absolutely.
So it's just something to consider is when you're talking with young people, how do you phrase it so that they feel empowered?
Yes.
Okay. You are a massive organization. How many acres do you have? Have you had to purchase land as you've gone along, or were you given a huge parcel? How does that work out?
Yes. our very first gift to us was $1 million building. And let me just say, we got that at about, 11 or 12 years in. You know, before then, we were very blessed that we would find warehouse space that we could utilize, you know, to do Christmas gifts and school supplies and things like that. But the irony that we were trying to help kids to not be homeless, yet we as an organization essentially were homeless. You know, we needed a home base.
Yeah.
And so we were given a 13,000 square foot building, and it's seated on a pretty decent size lot. That was our first gift. Our second was our farm, which is 10 and a half acres. And we had a donor actually write the check to us. So we were able to buy that farm debt-free. We as an organization run debt-free too. That, I think that's important to know. We've purchased an additional 22 acres of land that's about 4 minutes from our farm for future growth yet to be determined. We were given another 160 acres in also in North Alabama, but in the Muscle Shoals area several years ago. And then we also have 56 plots of land in a Birmingham neighborhood. We own the majority share of that neighborhood. And so we're still figuring out like what our plan for that is. We were also gifted land in Tennessee, a beautiful home and acreage that we ended up selling to help launch our equine therapy program last year. And so,
I love it.
Yeah. So we were gifted that right before COVID. Had COVID not happened, it would have been a completely different outcome of that. But we're constantly evaluating what our priorities are in service and what our kids need. To me, I look at property as assets and as a way to, you know, funnel and fund and progress what we're trying to do. And then you also have to look at the management and upkeep. You know, I mean, sometimes it's just we very much run as a business. And so we've been very, very blessed with the generosity of people that see the vision and what we're accomplishing every day that give us very unique gifts. We are gifted vehicles for, and then, you know, a lot of times our kids use those or we use those at our farm. It's just, yeah, we've been very fortunate to experience the generosity of our community. Last week, we got a farm truck that one of my friends, her uncle passed away. And she said, it's a good truck, but it's a farm truck. And I mean, it's a great quality farm truck. Just that morning, our equine therapist was in her SUV going to Tractor Supply, getting supplies for the horses. And she said, I sure wish I had a truck. And by that afternoon, one pulls up. And
wow.
So that's just kind of.
I would love to have seen her face.
Well, we sent a picture and she said, don't you mess with my heart. And we're like, no, for real. Like this will get licensed on. We're going to have one of our K-Tech instructors is a mechanic, you know, by hobby. And so he always checks our vehicles. And so in fact, this morning he's checking the vehicle and going and getting the truck licensed. And she'll have a pickup truck at the farm this afternoon. So there will be no more moving hay bales in an SUV.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, the donations, are these, because I imagine some people listening are like, how in the world are you getting all these donations? Are they bequeathed to you in wills? Are they given to you just from people who are blessed themselves and they have extra? And how do you go about asking for them? I'm just curious. Now, you've been around a while.
Yeah,
so granted, you have name recognition, I'm sure.
Well, all the gifts we have right now have been bequeathed just because we have come in contact with people who have been very blessed and they just feel the need to bless others. I know that we are in wills and that type of thing, but so far we've not received any of those gifts because our donors are still with us, thank goodness.
Oh, good.
But, you know, I mean, I really go back to the you have not because you ask not. When it comes to serving our kids, I am very bold and also very humble and appreciative. I usually just, hey, this is what I'm doing and this is what I need. And people just, they see the vision, but they also see our track record. They're no longer investing in just a whim or a what if. When we're able to show them life after life after life that we have been able to change, and I go to them and say, hey, this is what we see the next need is, and this is what I need, and this is our plan to solve it. Okay, Lee, we're in. I mean, yeah. We still get told no. I don't want to make it sound like that, you know, it's all yeses because, you know, I still hear no more than I hear yes, but I just keep asking because if, you know,
sure.
I tell people I'm at no right now. You know, I don't have it now, but if I go ask, and I'm just very upfront and transparent. And also, you know, that is in our, you know, business practice. I mean, we're audited. We have no debt. Our donors know that when they give to us, that it is going to go to what we're asking for. We're very transparent. And I think that that is a key piece for us to grow how we've grown is our level of integrity and transparency.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. You certainly have the credibility built up there. So I know we want to get to K-Tech and talk about that. What is K-Tech? You said you launched that in 2015, so about 10 years ago, 9 years ago. So what is K-Tech and how many youth do you serve and so forth?
So K-Tech is a workforce initiative under the Kids to Love organization. And we are now a licensed private school under the Alabama Community College System. And what we do is we teach workforce training skills to young people. I mentioned earlier how we had hit the $1 million mark on college scholarships. And what I found is our youth might go to college 1 year, but if you don't have that support system to be successful in college, you cannot continue. And so they would drop out. And so I had all these great young people that had the capacity to do more. They just did not have an opportunity to do more. And so K-Tech it's where we teach a lot of, in fact, we're up to 22 certifications that we can teach under K-Tech. And it's everything from mechatronics, which is mechanics and electronics. That for us was important because of the manufacturing that is so rich in Alabama now. There's been such a resurgence of automotive manufacturers coming to our state. But the skills that we teach our young people aren't just for automotive manufacturing. They're for any computer system. So say you are in the operating room and the robot goes down. Well, our students can fix the robot. They can do a robotic certification. They can do a soldering certification. We have Snap-on tools. So they're learning what these tools are and getting certified as they know how, not just what they are, but how to use them. And so in that time, we've awarded 484 certifications, and we view that as 484 lives that have been changed. One of those young people, his name is Willie, and he was at University of Alabama and doing great there, but was homeless and living in his car. And so he left that, went to a homeless shelter in Montgomery, and that's when we got the call. And he said, I have nowhere to go. I don't know what I'm going to do. And we sent him money to buy a ticket for the bus, brought him to North Alabama, and did an interview with him, brought him in and did an interview with him. We helped him with housing. We got him a job at Kroger, which is across the street. Like there's an apartment complex within walking distance of where we are, and then a Kroger on the other side of that. And so got him a job at Kroger at night. And that was several years ago that he came through our program. And now he is in Birmingham as a project manager, making over $50,000 a year. He put the work in, But because of that, and, you know, and we don't just teach them skill sets. We also do what we call Life Lab, where we help them with resumes and budgeting and healthy eating and public speaking. And our kids come in and they can't even look you in the eye day one. And each of them speak at graduation 16 weeks later.
Wow. So it's a 16-week program.
16-week program. We also offer virtual reality. We have a VR Academy where we teach these young people how to build sets and sounds in VR. We're seeing a lot of that growth in the Department of Defense, the DoD contractors that we have here. And so we just want to prepare these young people for, our goal is to give them skills that they can walk into a job that doesn't need a college education.
Do you support them after they get a job? Let's say they graduate from the K-Tech program and they get a job that's in line with what they learned. Do you provide ongoing support for a while? Because one of the things I've heard is, and it has to do with the trauma and reacting to triggers, is that a lot of young people coming out of foster care, they can get a job, but then they will quit or they're let go because there is just a, again, managing the trauma, managing reactions, concern and challenge for a lot of these young people. So they don't maintain the job for a long time.
Right. And, you know, if you look at that, it goes back to how they handled foster care. When things got tough, they would blow a placement and leave. And so they didn't learn how to establish relationships and value relationships when they were in foster care. And if you don't address that, then that's, they're going to continue to self-sabotage their entire life. And so, yes, for us, it's like we joke that they graduate, but they really don't go anywhere. They're back on Monday morning because they love the family environment that we create there. And it's also a catch-22 for our kids because, you know, you can't get a job without experience, can't get experience without a job. You can't get a car without a job to pay for it. And I just got a job, but I don't have a car. So, we really wrap our arms around these young people, helping them, first of all, to empower them. I think so many times youth in foster care have only heard what they're bad at and the negative of it. And what we try to do, and you said it earlier, words matter, is we use life-giving words. And so instead of saying, gosh, this kid has the worst attitude and blah, 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 I'm like, well, maybe he has leadership abilities. Are we even challenging him? Maybe he's bored. You know, educators deal with that challenge every single day of how do I keep all my students engaged and how do I keep them successful? I feel like that's a challenge we have, but especially when our youth finish our K-Tech program and they graduate, and sometimes they try to self-sabotage before graduation because they've never achieved anything. And if I go changing the script now, then you're going to expect more of me. And so, you know, we have to have those hard conversations of, you know, you said you wanted more. We're giving you the opportunity for more, but this is as far as I can go. The rest is on you. I'm going to be here with you. I'm going to walk beside you, but you got to put the work in. And I know that you can do it. And so, yeah, so we support with housing as they graduate and help with apartments, you know, getting them set up in apartments. I mean, because they have nothing. So you can't just give them an apartment. You've got to also furnish the apartment. You can't just get them a job. You've got to help them with a car. And so, you know, when we look at these vehicles that are donated to the foundation, you know, there are students that, and I tell them this the whole time they're in K-Tech, you know, your behavior now will dictate your opportunity later. And they really don't know what I'm talking about. But I constantly say that to them because it's discipline of showing up on time. It's discipline of doing your homework. And so to me, we had one young man that he wasn't the best student academically, but he was the hardest worker. And I told him one day, I said, that's your superpower. And he looked at me, he said, what are you talking about? I said, you are going to outwork everybody around you. I said, because the grades matter here. And if you're making an A or a C, if you're making a C, but when we take you into the lab and you get it and you do it the first time and you work hard to figure something out if you don't understand it, that work ethic is what is going to serve you the best going forward in your life. And so because of his work ethic, when he graduated, We brought him in and we sit him down and I said, I have a vehicle that was donated to the foundation. Now, we also are very buttoned up legally. They have to sign contracts that we outline what the expectation is. We put them on Life 360, so we're able to make sure that they're not driving above the speed limit. I mean, we're in their business, and they don't always like that because they've never had people necessarily to watch them. But we teach them boundaries are healthy. And if we turn them loose with no level of expectation, they will go back and revert to what they've always done.
And well, so, it's human nature.
That's right. And so we've got to change behavior. We've got to change the level of expectation. And by that point, they have built a relationship with me, our team, our instructors, that we're now their new family, and they are not going to let us down. And so relationship is one of the most important things we do in everything that we do is build a relationship. So we give them cars. And I mean, and there was one young man that he was driving way too fast. He got a ticket. He wrecked the car. We called him in. Hey, man, you know our expectation, right? But then we call his work and we find out how great he's doing on the job. And I said, I don't want to take that away from you, but you've got to follow all rules. And so we gave him another chance. But I also told him, I said, I'm giving you another chance, but let me make sure that you understand you need to be saving every penny because you're going to need to buy your own car. Then we try to teach them not to do that with credit. We try to teach them, you know, let's get an older car. Let's pay cash. You don't have the capacity for a loan if they can even get it, you know, and I tell them, I'm not co-signing a loan for you. I will get you to that point. But we help them go shop for a good used car. You know, our K-Tech instructors that have that mechanical background, they will go, they will check that car out for them. So it's everything that normal parents do for their children. We become that family system in a very non-traditional way. And one of my young men, he is as big as a door. He's African-American. I'm white. He goes to church with us, you know, when he was here every Sunday. And I remember walking into church one Sunday and just people just turn around and look at me like staring. And I don't know if it's because we're in the South or what. And I just kind of look at them and I'm like, you know what I do. You know, like, I mean, why is this even a thing? And I become so protective of my kids that we didn't go back to that church again. You know, we just didn't go back. And they know that because they look at me and he said, Miss Lee, they're staring. And I said, okay. And he's like, doesn't that bother you? I said, does it bother you? And he said, not if it doesn't bother you. I said, well, let's just go sit down. And so it's just that empowering of no longer be a victim and to change from being the one that always is on the receiving end of a handout. They all come and they volunteer in the warehouse and they're giving back. And that is one of the most empowering mind shift moments for our kids. It's because they know they used to be on the receiving end. And now we've empowered them to be able to be on the giving end. And every one of them come back and volunteer at Christmas, even if they've graduated K-Tech. Hey, when's the volunteer hours? I want to come back and work. And so it truly is changing that narrative of victim, poverty, I can't. I trust them with things that they can't. Miss Lee, I can't believe you're going to trust me with this. And I'm like, well, then don't mess it up. I'm trusting you, but don't mess it up. Don't make me regret trusting you. And so we've got a real blunt, very transparent relationship, but it is changing lives of these kids. Yeah. And when we see the success after success after success, and they all tell me, they're like, you know what, Miss Lee, one day you hug me and one day you kick my butt. And I'm like, well, I met you where you are, you know, but I was not going to let them miss their opportunity and the potential that we saw in them because it was going to be uncomfortable for them.
Yeah. I think one of the things that programs need to do when they're working with these young people is to help them not just transition to a job and a place to live and so forth, but also help them understand that when they're young, when they're little, things do happen to you that are out of your control.
Right.
But as you get older, then you start making choices. And those choices are going to influence the outcome of your life. And yes. I think helping them understand that the future is going to depend upon your choices moving forward.
Right. I've got this one young lady that she graduated law school from the George Washington School of Law. And she was one of our scholarship recipients. And she and I connected when she was in college. And she got an associate's degree as a paralegal. She got a bachelor's degree, graduated with a 4.0 from University of Alabama, Huntsville, and then went to the George Washington School of Law. And so she and I connected when she was in college and as a scholarship recipient. And she told me one day, she said, and she and I just clicked. We just clicked. And she said, "Miss Lee, you know, you wouldn't have liked me when I was in high school." And I said, "Why not?" Because as we were creating our group home for girls, I dipped back to my kids, all the ones that were just thriving on scholarships. And I said, "Okay, what did you need when you were that age?" And I let them help me create the culture of where we are. And she said, you know, that's when she said, "You wouldn't have liked me." And I said, "Why?" She said, "Oh, I was a troublemaker. I was constantly getting put in lockdown facilities. You know, I would mouth off." And I looked at her and I said, "That's because you're a leader and you were showing leadership and you were standing up and advocating for yourself. And they didn't like that. Now you are harnessing your leadership ability through the power of education, because that's what drove her to be an attorney. And now she helps people who are getting evicted out of their homes in Washington." And I said, "You have the power to go in and sit down at that table. And you remember how it felt when the attorney came in and you felt so out of place." I said, "But you meet them exactly where they are because you've been there and you've walked in their shoes." And I said, "Don't ever let somebody tell you that you cannot achieve something." And so when she graduated from GW Law, she got 2 awards. Some got none. Some got 1. She was the only student that got 2. And she just, you know, she harnessed that power and all of that, all those words and all that negativity. And I said, "That is your energy. And you've got, for every person that said you can't, you got to show them you can." And she is just, she's doing it. And so when you talk about the power of words, I just think about Sacred and how she harnessed that for good and the lives that she's changing now because of someone told her once she couldn't.
And I think it takes a paradigm shift for these young people to be able to see that in themselves.
Yes.
So it's up to the adults to help them get to that epiphany.
Well, and I think it's so important for them to have those adults in their life. You know, I mean, the system is not set up for these people to age out and be successful. I mean, that's why another option that we have for aging out that I just want to mention briefly is our cottages. So when our girls age out of our farm, you know, they're there 7 to 19. And when they turn 20, we're licensed by the state, even though we don't set their funds. But when they turn 20, they have to leave. Well, by the time they turn 20, I've got our girls on track for college or working or, you know, and I can't just drop them. And so early on, we would help them with apartments, but then they would miss that family environment at the farm. They would be in an apartment by themselves. And while it was okay in that moment, I again wanted to create community and create a family network. And so we have our first 5 cottages of a cottage community with land to build 20. Our first 4 cottages are full. Our 5th one we're holding for a young lady that will graduate in May that we're hoping will do K-Tech in the fall. And so we're saving that 5th cottage for her. But they don't just live there. We teach them how to balance a budget. We teach them how to build a menu and grocery shop. We always say you can't eat your money. If you eat, like, you know, you can't just hit every drive-thru on the way home and eat your money. And, you know, they think that we're crazy for saying that. And so one day I said, you just track how much you spend on drive-thrus. And they come back and they said, "Oh my gosh, I had no idea." I said, "It's the cost of convenience."
Yeah, especially now.
Yes. I said, "And you don't have that kind of money. You know, you don't have drive-thru money." Like that's not where we are yet. We're going to get to drive-thru money, but right now you don't have drive-thru money. So we've created a community there with our cottages of these young ladies aging out. We're changing lives there too. It's so exciting to see how successful they're becoming in their They're telling us what they want to do. And then we're helping them navigate that. I never put my agenda on them. What do you want to do? What lights you up? What, where do you want to change the world? And, you know, one of our young ladies is wanting to be a vet tech assistant. And so she's in school for that. We helped her get a job at a vet office. And so she was really excited when we added equine therapy because she said, oh my gosh, in the spring, my course is about large animals. And I said, well, here's your internship. Mm-hmm. We brought it to you.
Yeah. I tell you what, if there's an opportunity where she would get a job, it's in large animal veterinary medicine because there are not a lot of young people going into that.
Yes, yes. And so she is so good to help with our horses because it's just so therapeutic with our equine therapy program. And what a better person to work in that than someone that already loves animals. So she just kind of looked at me one day. She said, did you do this for me? I said, girl, you think I launched a whole program just for you? And I just kind of smiled and I said, but since it's right outside your door, you know, you do with it what you want. And she's like, yeah, thanks.
Take advantage of that.
Absolutely.
Take advantage. Well, I want to go back to, you started to talk about foster care.
Yes.
And how the foster care system does not prepare young people for adulthood. And so one of the questions that I do like to ask to close on is, how can the foster care system, state, you know, local, federal even, what are some services, what are some things that the system can do for these young people to improve the current outcomes?
Well, I've got some ideas. But I think the first thing that really has to happen is we've got to make sure we have enough workers that are trained. I think the biggest problem we have in child welfare is the caseload that workers have. I don't think we have near enough workers, and I don't think that they're properly trained. To me, that is just such a disservice to our kids in care. I think the second thing is we've got to change our mindset, and we've got great relationships with the workers that we have. There is a crisis mentality, and they are constantly in crisis because they are picking up children that have been abused and neglected. And, you know, they're in that crisis of, I've got to get the child out of the situation and into the safety of foster care. They are not even thinking about what happens to these kids that age out 5 years down the road, because they are in the moment of trying to keep kids safe and healthy. And again, that's their job. So to me, I think it is critical for organizations like ours to come along beside and say, hey, you do what you do well, and we're going to come along beside you, and we're going to support these young people aging out. I don't know that that burden will ever fall on the child welfare system. I do think that they can do a better job of, you know, evaluating strengths and weaknesses as these kids hit freshman, sophomore, and high school, so they can start guiding them toward career paths. And one of the programs, I'm really excited, this is the first time I'm going to announce this anywhere, is we are getting ready to launch our K-Tech Academy, which is when we're going to start going back to kids, freshman, sophomore, in care in high school, and helping them start evaluate their strengths and weaknesses so we can give them opportunities at careers. And that's something that I would love any of your listeners, if they want to, you know, work with us on this, this is something that we could share on a national platform. For instance, in a VR headset, we've got what it's like to work a day in the life as a forklift driver. Well, you look at our kids, the only professionals that they have ever been around are social workers, nurses, doctors, and law enforcement, because that's who has come into their life. And so the majority of the children that I deal with, and I say children and youth broad just because, you know, I'm in my 50s and they're all kids to me.
I'm with you.
And I don't mean disrespect for them, and they know that because they're my kids, but they don't know what they don't know. And, you know, in the words of Maya Angelou, do what you do until you know better, and when you know better, do better. And so what I want to do is educate our kids so they know better and they can do better. And that is just the power of education. But if that is the only scope of a professional, because I'm dealing with children that so many of them are first-generation high school graduates, they've never filled out a college application, I am speaking Greek to them. And then you're looking at doing something that has never been done before, which is fear and scared. And so what we're hoping with our K-Tech Academy is to bring these young people in, do some assessment so we know what they're good at, and then we can start changing that narrative. Did you know that you really have strengths in this area? Well, nobody's ever told me I'm good at anything. Well, I'm here to tell you this is what I think you're good at. And you know what? These three careers, I really think you should look into that. And then we start setting up a day in the life of. We start giving them experience. We empower them to make decisions instead of case managers making decisions for them. We empower them. And to me, I think of everything that we're doing, and I'm so excited about all of this. I'm so excited about this because I think we're getting ready to empower this generation of young people that are aging out by arming them with education. And we're not just saying it's available. Now we're saying, okay, here's the first three steps to get started, and we're going to walk with you to do this.
Yeah. And if they feel like they have a goal, then they can start feeling like they can have control.
Absolutely.
Because without a goal and without a target, I don't think that sense of control is as easy to come by.
And if we start that as the freshman and sophomore years of high school, then there may be a class that they have not even had on their radar to take that we could start their junior and senior year, you know, making sure that they had those core competencies that they need. That way they are just walking right into what they feel called to do. And so to me, I am so excited about this. And like I said, I know you'll put our contact and all that, but I'd love to have conversations because I see this as a tool that those of us in this world could use to truly change the trajectory of every youth aging out across the nation. And I am stoked about it.
I don't blame you. That is very exciting. I think the tough part is thinking about how could the foster care system do something like this? Well, if the social workers are already overworked and understaffed, then they wouldn't necessarily have time to do this. Can you set that expectation on foster parents? I don't think so, because there's no guarantee of consistency. Mm-mm. So is it a matter of just maybe making sure there's funding to set up a program like this through a nonprofit partnership around the country?
I mean, obviously we're doing this, so dare I say, we're the lead organization. So if we could partner with other nonprofits to come along to share assets and opportunities, and you know, they could train with us so we could give them the knowledge, we would love to do that. But I think that's how we're going to change this aging out crisis in America. I don't think we can put this on social services, and I don't think we can put it on the social workers that are in the trenches every day. And I just don't see them adding career-focused social workers when their caseload is already so high. I think it's going to have to be from outside partners that are uninhibited. You know, it's critical to build that partnership with social services. I mean, you've got to work with them, obviously. But no, I mean, foster parents, you can't put this on the foster parents. And I mean, because you may meet with a foster parent and a youth place with them, and that child's a freshman in high school, they may be in three placements before they're seniors.
There's no consistency in that either, which is another, we don't have time, maybe another podcast someday, but talking about how to set up something online so that there can be some consistency for youth, no matter what placements they're in, some kind of online virtual support for them that would remain the same no matter where they are.
Yes. Yes.
Whether it's educational or informational or even just a virtual coach, you know, somebody who can help them through that no matter what.
Yes, to help them navigate it. Because that's the thing, they don't know what they don't know. And that's, you know, that's what I tell all of my kids. I sit down and, you know, I'll ask a question and they drop their head. And I said, listen, I'm not judging you, but I just need to know where you are so I know where to start. And you and I are going to have a very transparent conversation. And we're going to have days that you love me and days that you hate me. But I guarantee you, when it's all said and done and we start helping you meet your goals, you know, that's the goal. And so if you and I can agree on the goal, then we're going to work together on the pathway to get there. That's just what it takes. We need people across the country that care about these kids to step up and say, you know what, I don't even know where to begin. And that's when I say, hey, give me a call, we can help. And then we've got to create a grassroots army of people saying enough is enough. I'm tired of 75 to 80% of our kids ending up in the juvenile justice system or prison system. It is time that we stop that pathway and create a new pathway of success for these young people.
And you would think the government would want to do that because it's good. I mean,
I'm sorry, I'm laughing.
Follow the money, right? The money, right? Yeah. So you would think they would say, oh, well, if we have productive citizens, we have more taxes versus if we have people going into juvenile justice and prison, homeless, what have you, then we're spending money on them. I'm like, hello, if at the very bottom line, if you're going to be looking at money, don't you think there's a benefit to helping these young people be successful?
I know. And what frustrates me is just taking the demographic of children in foster care. And you look at the aging out and the pipeline to prison. You look at aging out and homelessness. If we just solved aging out of foster care, but like you said, follow the money. I mean, we're a country that we're not going to do anything preventively or proactively. We're only going to serve reactively. And everything we do is a proactive approach. Because to me, you know, I tell donors all the time, you can invest in a scholarship to send a child to K-Tech, which is about $2,500. And your return on that investment is an educated, tax-paying citizen. And you don't have to worry about this child coming in and robbing a convenience store while you and your family are there that night, because now they have skills and a job and you've changed the trajectory of their life. You've rewritten an entire generation of poverty in one investment, or you could do nothing. And the cost for that in Alabama is over $300,000 to incarcerate one person for 20 years, which is the given of a felony. And so I'm like, either you invest today or you pay tomorrow. But the problem with lawmakers and our system is we're not going to do anything until we have to. That's why we're spending billions building more prisons instead of spending thousands to solve. And if we just solved our pocket of our kids aging out, just look at the lives we could change and the money we could save and what a better community we would have, because our kids want better. They don't want to go to prison. But if you're hungry and you're homeless, you're going to do what you have to do to survive. And so we've got to make sure we don't let our kids get in that situation anymore.
Right. I agree. Preaching to the choir.
Come on. Pass the plate. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
I love this because this is just such my passion and my soapbox. And you know, there's very few people that get it, and they don't get the big picture of it. And you and your listeners do. The other thing I think is that there's strength in numbers. And I think that there's so few and far between of those of us that really want to change it. And that's why I think we have to get together and have a unified system. And because we can't depend on the government to do it, we're going to have to be proactive. And so call me, let's work together, let's solve this problem. We can make a difference in the lives of these kids.
Yep, I agree. Well, unfortunately, Lee, I think we're going to have to bring this to a close. We are at the end of our time, but I do want to give you the opportunity, should there be anybody out there who would like to send a donation or contact you to talk with you about what we've discussed today. What is your website and how can people reach you?
So our website is kidstolove.org, KIDSTOLOVE.org. My email is lee@kidstolove.org. We're also very active on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Just look for Kids to Love. We would love for you to follow all of our social media and get plugged in. And if you would love to join this conversation and be a part of the solution with us, shoot me an email and we can jump on a Zoom call no matter where you are. But thank you so much for your time and letting us share how we're serving kids and changing lives every day.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm very excited about the work that you're doing there in Alabama and the direction that you're going in. I didn't have an idea of how big that you are and everything that you do. And so I'm so glad we had this opportunity to learn about what you're doing there. And I do hope that people reach out to you, because I think the connecting, like you're saying, the connecting, the networking, the learning from each other, all of that is going to only help these young people.
Absolutely. And thank you for hosting this platform and letting us have these conversations about passions that, topics that we're so passionate about.
You're very welcome. Very happy to have that. And we have a lot of podcasts out there. If we have any new listeners, just look through the website, agingoutinstitute.org, and look for the podcast link in the menu. And you'll see we're on our fifth year
Woohoo!
Of podcasts. So I know it's very exciting. Or you can listen to them through pretty much any podcast distributor. So thank you so much, Lee. I so appreciate your time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. For those who have listened to the end, thank you very much. As mentioned, you can find our podcast on agingoutinstitute.org. And you can also find all of the other programs that we have. We have an awards program that's going to be coming up here in the summer. So you can look for information about that. We have an online community for organizations and individuals who support youth aging out of foster care. We'd love to have you be part of those conversations as well. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.